It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Videos from the aftermath of the alleged chemical attack show apparently lifeless bodies with no obvious injuries. Survivors struggling to breathe, especially children, and being hosed down as if to remove a substance from their skin. We cannot independently verify any of these videos or confirm whether a chemical attack took place. Survivors, though, reportedly smelled of chlorine, a chemical that can be deadly in enclosed spaces. It's thought to have been widely used as a weapon throughout the Syrian conflict. This comes as the Syrian regime assaults eastern Ghouta. It's the last stronghold of Syrian rebels, close to the country's capital, Damascus. But the regime has denied any involvement in this alleged use of a chemical weapon. And so has its ally, Russia. It's almost exactly a year since another large-scale chemical attack on the town of Han Shaihun in northern Syria. Scores were killed by sarin nerve agent, blamed by the US and UN investigators on the Syrian regime. The US responded to the Han Shaihun attack with strikes on a Syrian regime airbase. Nearly 60 cruise missiles targeting regime aircraft and ammunition dumps.
The questions now include whether outside investigators will be given access to the site of this alleged chemical attack, whether investigations find that a chemical weapon was used, and if it was chlorine, whether that will draw an international response.
All right, that was CBS News. Sandy Rios with you on this Monday. It may seem like it's all bad news, but it really isn't. Oh, that's not good news. But there are other things that I want to talk to you about that really should make you encouraged. On the issue of Syria, terrible situation. And, of course, this is not the first time this has happened. We've talked about the allegations against Bashar al-Assad for using chemical weapons on his own people. The Obama administration talked about that a lot, made much of it. I actually pushed back because I wasn't convinced it was Assad. But now people are telling me, who are national security experts, that they do believe this is Assad doing this because he's the only one that has sarin gas. And, of course, the Russians are involved with them. The president is calling President Assad an animal now and says that basically what he said, there'll be a big price. That's what he said in one of his tweets. We don't know what that's going to be. The UN Security Council is holding an emergency meeting. You have to understand that the world decided after World War I that there would be a pact between civilized nations not to use chemical weapons in warfare because they saw just how horrible and how many innocent people can be so brutally wounded, injured, maimed, you fill in the blank, by these kinds of tactics in warfare. And so that's what's happening in Syria, and you'll be hearing all about this later in the day. The other big story internationally, of course, is the fact that the U.S. and North Korea have been having private, secret talks and direct talks. They've been meeting in another country, and they've been talking. And this is the stunning part. This is stunning. I'm reading this from CNN.com. Central Intelligence Agency Director Mike Pompeo and a team at the CIA have been working through intelligence-backed channels to make preparations for the summit. But several officials say North Korea has since acknowledged Trump's acceptance, and Pyongyang has reaffirmed Kim Jong-un is willing to discuss the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that should be the headline around the world. This has been 20 years of playing, appeasing sending money to North Korea to buy them off, just have them to beg them to stop, you know, developing nuclear weapons. And so we give them more money and they promise not to use nuclear technology. Oh, no, we'll just use it on developing power. And they've been lying about this for years. And you've heard me say it. I will repeat that John Bolton, Ambassador John Bolton, former ambassador, had been warning. That's when I first met John. I had come back from North Korea myself. I was the first chairman of the North Korea Freedom Coalition. And John was begging the Bush administration to do something about North Korea. But because so much was happening in the Middle East, they just didn't. And so, of course, Barack Obama did nothing. And now President Trump has inherited a terrible situation and been roundly criticized for how he, you know, has blustered against Kim Jong-un. But look at this. Will you look at this and absorb it? That the fact that Kim Jong-un is even discussing, he's willing to discuss the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula is amazing. It's nothing short of amazing. And some are saying that maybe there may be some rebellion sort of crack in the hold that he has on the peninsula right now, the North Peninsula. So we'll see as that develops. But if you think for a minute that President Donald Trump is not accomplishing anything, I just have to tell you, this is huge. And it's ironic to me that this is the news. This story, I guess, came out yesterday. I just printed it out. I think it's yesterday. It's not today. May have been Saturday. That today is Ambassador John Bolton's first day on the job at the White House as the head of the National Security Council. That's just amazing. What a day for him to step into that post. With all that he knows about Syria, with all that he knows and understands about North Korea, it's just amazing. And the other part of that is that the news came across this morning that Michael Anton is out immediately, the National Security Council. And from all accounts, that's a very good thing. Many people are saying that it was Michael Anton who was doing so much of the leaking. Remember just, 2 weeks ago when a story was leaked about President Trump? There's something about in his notes, he was instructed by his national security advisors not to congratulate Putin on his success as the president of Russia, and how he ignored that. Remember that story? And they wondered, who leaked that? Because only a few people knew about that. Well, they think it's Michael Anton. And then he's leaked many, many other things, that he was very close to McMaster and was doing everything he could to undermine the president and to support McMaster. So he's out. This is good news. I have to tell you, this is such good news. Things are changing. You know, the nation is at stake. Our national security is at stake. And to watch H.R. McMaster preside in that role and get rid of all the people that could be trusted, the grown-ups in the room that actually understood foreign policy, was pretty discouraging. I mean, it was just really unbelievable that when President Trump was elected, we started seeing this purging of conservatives. And so it seems like the tide has been stemmed. We'll see what happens next. But I'm really encouraged. At the same time, there is an attack, a big-time attack, against Mike Pompeo, the new nominee for the CIA, and John Bolton. Ambassador Bolton does not have to be confirmed by anyone. He's stepping right in there because he doesn't, by law, have to be confirmed. Pompeo does. But here's the way the attack goes. Pompeo, this is the New York Times headline. Pompeo and Bolton appointments raise alarm over ties to anti-Islam groups. And then it goes through, and I could spend a whole show on this. But if you've listened to me for a long time, you understand. I hope you still understand. The Muslim Brotherhood is the civilization jihad wing of radical Islam in this country and in other countries. It has been declared a terrorist organization in Egypt, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, because they fully understand how dangerous they are. But here, we elect them to public office. We praise them. We let CARE be involved in FBI investigations of, you know, Islamic attacks in nightclubs in Orlando. It's just amazing what has happened under President Barack Obama in terms of the influence of the Muslim Brotherhood. And so Pompeo and John Bolton understand this. And so now they're being raked over the coals for their associations with such terrible people as Frank Gaffney and others. Brigitte Gabriel, who you know well because you know me. You know who Brigitte is with Act for America. And so the whole article is this slam piece about how terrible they are toward Islam and how mistreated Muslims will be under the leadership of Pompeo and John Bolton. So that's the next attack happening. And so that's the news. Again, more detail about that. We may get into that. We may have to get into it more if it becomes more of a problem or an issue. But let me just say the pro-Islamists are on, they're furious, and they're doing everything they can to undermine and subvert. I'm interested to see how Ambassador Bolton is going to change personnel on that National Security Committee. I'm really, because Mrs. Clinton's crew and Barack Obama's crew are the ones that sit at the table. That's what H.R. McMaster did. He purged all the conservatives, including Sebastian Gorka and many others that I know personally, and he replaced them with people that were not President Trump's friends, who often mocked him, made fun of him, leaked on him. It's been a shocking story, and I think maybe President Trump has finally figured out that he could not trust a lot of the people that he thought he could trust. And speaking of things that the president has done, this is what's happened over the weekend. This is Griff Jenkins.
They are active status right now. They are armored up. They are on the border, 250 guard troops taking to the skies, taking to the ground, giving the Border Patrol support. They've had 100 guardsmen already here since 2014, but we came here to the headquarters, Camp Mabry, talked to Brigadier General Tracy Norris to talk a little bit about the mission. Here's what she had to say.
I see it as an evolving mission, and we're still identifying exactly the requirements. We have some. We're expecting to have more coming from the border. And then if for some reason with our rotation and that we get to a full capacity, we also have the ability, if we need to call on other states to assist us.
Now, some other states, New Mexico, Ohio, South Carolina, willing to send troops if need be. Arizona, of course, has already answered the call. They're sending guardsmen, and we're waiting on California. The guard there says they're willing. The governor hasn't yet activated them. But, you know, I talked to General Norris also about what role they will play, because under Title 32, they are authorized to act in law enforcement duties, but it appears they'll be mostly support at this point. Here's what General Norris says.
Here, when we're under our governor in a Title 32, we're in a support role to law enforcement or any other federal agency or any other state agency. But we are always in support of first responders or law enforcement.
Now, a little bit later today, guys, we will go on one of the first missions in a helicopter over the border and show you how these guardsmen are bringing you eyes in the sky. Interestingly enough, a quick last tidbit. It was Hurricane Harvey the last time this group was mobilized like this.
All right, this is interesting. You know, this is happening on the border as we speak, and you have been following this. I know you have. The borders have become out of control after the president was elected. There was a sudden drop off of border crossings, and then as the president sort of started moderating his public statements, and as the Congress failed to give money for the wall and fought him at every turn, it changed. And so then the word got out, oh, now you can get back across the border. And so certainly they've been doing it to the tune of about 1,000 a month. And then we have this caravan of 1,000-plus Central Americans who've been organized by some leftist group announcing that they're on their way to the southern border and they're going to invade the country. And the president's saying, oh, no, you're not. And so saying that we're going to send the military to the border, this is not going to happen. So that's why the Congress has failed. The Congress has failed. Have I said that before? Speaker Paul Ryan has failed. Leader Mitch McConnell has failed. And so have so many of the Republicans in leadership, in spite of their conservative membership, the handful that are fighting. The president of the United States has been steadfast on this, and that's why the National Guard is going down there. And so it's the only way he can protect our border, since Congress will not do its job. I'll be back in just a second. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hey, my name is Brant. You ever make a change and then wonder, why didn't I do this a long time ago? That's what's happening for thousands of people with regard to their health care. They're joining MediShare, and then they're wondering, why didn't I already do this? For most members, it costs less than half what they were paying for their old health plan. There's a huge provider network, too. You can customize your plan, and this is awesome. MediShare members can go online with a doctor 24/7. So if you need a prescription for the flu or something, it's so convenient for you and your family. So yeah, this is one of those why did I wait on this things. And if you don't love your current health plan, you're not stuck with it. You can join MediShare anytime. By the way, to give you an idea, the typical savings for a family, about $500 a month. It just makes so much sense. Check it out. They're super easy to talk to. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've seen God open up so many doors for us to help serve and love those who get affected by a natural disaster.
As the trees and the wind started crashing down around us, my wife was, of course, very diligently praying, you know, Lord, please be with us.
Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others.
I see these volunteers all as a gift from God.
And I'm just grateful they're here, you know, helping out. It's a blessing.
If you're interested in becoming a part of what God's doing through 8 Days of Hope, please go to 8daysofhope.com, click on Get Involved, submit your email address.
I've noticed that whenever there's a time in my life when things might be a little gloomy, the number one thing that I can do is to go serve somebody.
And I would encourage anyone else to, it's worth it. Come out and do it next time if you didn't make it to this one. And the Father will really bless you in it.
Thank you so much for your prayers and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Jay-Z dropped by David Letterman's new Netflix show the other day to unload on President Trump.
He's bringing out an ugly side of America that we wanted to believe was gone, and it's still here, and we still got to deal with it. We have to have tough conversations. We have to talk about the N-word, and we have to talk about why white men are so privileged in this country.
There's a lot of irony here, folks. Jay-Z, a black man, is worth more than $800 million, a man who earned his fortune in part by rapping about the N-word. A black man was elected and re-elected president. Some of Hollywood's biggest stars are people of color. Many of our most successful athletes are, too. So what's this really all about? Why is society trying to shame people based on their skin color? I've been putting a lot of thought to this question lately, and I keep coming back to one disturbing conclusion. The white privilege agenda is pure, unadulterated reverse racism. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
President Trump's home address engulfed in a massive fire. Look at those orange flames. Windows smashed, black smoke just rolling out. This is 50 stories up in one of the most well-known addresses in New York City, Trump Tower.
Michael Cohen, who's Trump's lawyer, texted me and said, are you in the building? I said, yes. He said, you better get out ASAP.
According to the FDNY, the call came in for a fire at 5:30 Saturday night. There were no official evacuations, but one man didn't make it out.
The apartment was virtually entirely on fire. They pushed in heroically. They were knocking down the fire. They found one occupant of the apartment on the 50th floor.
67-year-old Todd Brasner was killed in the blaze, and 6 firefighters were injured. These photos, taken by a worker in a building next door, show what folks were up against. The yellow jackets are firefighters. The fire chief said the fire did not reach the president's residence, but did not rule out smoke damage. The building has been under 24-hour protection, and a nearby street has been completely shut down since he was elected. The president and his family were not home. In a tweet, the president saying, fire at Trump Tower is out, very confined, well-built building. Firemen and women did a great job. Thank you. The building's upper floors did not have sprinklers. They were not required when the high-rise was constructed.
The upper floors, which are residence floors, are not sprinklered, but the building sure stood up quite well.
All right, that was a report from ABC News, and that happened over the weekend. And I don't know, that was a huge fire, actually. If you saw it, it was wrapping around the building, and it was very, very frightening for the residents in it. Very serious to the Trump Tower. 67-year-old Todd Brasner was killed. By the way, he was an art dealer and a very close friend to Andy Warhol. So just an interesting little perspective there. They said that the entire apartment was completely on fire when the firemen got there. So who knows the mystery of that? I don't. It's the second fire this year in the Trump Tower. There weren't any fatalities, but three people were injured in January when a fire broke out in a cooling unit on the roof deck of the building. So you wonder, don't you? I find myself wondering. You know, is someone trying to do something? Trump, of course, has his offices there. That's his home base. When he's in Manhattan, that's where his family lives. And so it's pretty scary, really, when you think about it. And it's also even maybe more scary when you see how people are responding. Mockery from the left. For instance, David Crosby, the old rock and roller, shall I say, tweeted, "Oh boy, burn, baby, burn." That was his response to it. And so this is the kind of people. And this is the kind of people that are doing everything they can to destroy this president. You know, I just told you in the first segment some significant things that President Trump has done. I talked to you about him coming after Bashar al-Assad. He hasn't done anything yet, but his words indicate that he is certainly, there will be consequences for that chemical attack in Syria. He also criticized President Obama for drawing a red line and then ignoring it. And then, of course, sending this whole business with Kim Jong-un, actually getting Kim Jong-un to agree to talks and to agree to discussing denuclearizing North Korea is huge. That's amazing. And the third thing that's domestic is that he has sent National Guard to the border to stop invaders, to protect this country. And yet, this is the kind of treatment that he gets, mockery, when his residence, the place where his family lives when they're in New York, where he lives when he's in New York, catches fire, they rejoice. It's just amazing. Reminds me of something Michelle Obama said last week. You might have heard this, but she was doing an interview, and this was her assessment of President Trump's time as president. Let's listen.
The 8 years that Barack was president, it was sort of like having the good parent at home, the one that told you to eat your carrots and go to bed on time. And now perhaps we have the other parent. Maybe it feels fun to some for now because we can eat candy all day and, mm-hmm. you know, stay up late and not follow the rules.
Really? Boy, you talk about the world upside down. We've often said this, the left always says the opposite of what's really true, but they say it so convincingly. You know, the president in issuing tariffs on goods out of China and entering into this trade war with China said recently, last week, this is going to be painful. There's going to be some pain because we have made such terrible agreements with them and internationally that it's this is going to be a rough ride. The stock market is going up. It's going down. It's going up. It's going down. It doesn't know what to do with itself. There will be some pain in order to get some eventual gain to stabilize this country, to bring jobs back. And he's like, who is the dad here? Who's the adult? I think it's President Trump. And when he says, no, a country has to have borders. No, if you don't have borders, you don't have a country. And he says that all the time. That sounds like the adult thing. It's the easy thing seems to be, oh, yes, just, you know, we feel sorry for everyone. Everyone should be allowed in. And who are we to say that they can't come into our country? You know, so this is... that's what Barack Obama did, certainly by his policies. If he didn't say it, that's what they were doing. So I guess you might say I have a different opinion from Mrs. Obama. Have you been following this dust-up between Sean Hannity and Jimmy Kimmel? Of course, it's all about their disagreement on President Trump, but it's really getting disgusting, to be honest with you, is from Jimmy Kimmel's part. And I want to go into it a little bit. I can't too much because it's things I can't say on this network. But let's just say it started, I think, last week when Mrs. Mrs. Trump was reading to some to children, and she was reading a children's book, and Jimmy Kimmel mocked her. And so I'm going to let Sean, I'm just going to play a little clip here of Sean Hannity speaking about it and then referring to Jimmy Kimmel. Then I'll talk to you about the aftermath. Here it is.
This is brutal. Liberal Jimmy Kimmel making fun of the First Lady of the United States and her involvement in the White House Easter egg roll, even her accents. Jimmy, you're a despicable disgrace. Take a look.
I want to really thank the First Lady, Melania, who has done an incredible job. She worked so hard on this event, and so I want to thank you.
Yeah. That's true. Not a chance she did one thing to help set that up. There's no... She didn't die egg. She didn't feel bad. Only thing she's been working on is an escape tunnel. No White House Easter celebration would be complete without story time from our First Lady.
Never stop exploring, because life would be boring. Be clever and curious, just like a cat. Ask lots of questions about this and that.
About this and that. Guillermo, you realize what this means? You could be First Lady of the United States.
Now, I'm going to tell you something. What a disgrace. Hey, Mr. Kimmel, that's her fifth language. How many do you speak?
All right, so that was how this started. And so Sean is, you heard what he said, he's taking Kimmel on. And I think he's, I mean, listen, I agree with Sean completely. How dare he do that? You know, she is such a lady. She wasn't always. I was concerned about Melania becoming First Lady. I really was. I couldn't imagine it would have been this way. But she had me, I'm telling you, when she read the Lord's Prayer at one of the inaugural events, and since then, she has conducted herself as a lady who I believe understands. She seems to have come into her own. And I don't know spiritually, I certainly know people have talked to her about God. I can't make a claim. I don't know, but I sense a change. And this is the part about being a Christian that either people don't want to know or they refuse to acknowledge. And that is that Christians understand, above all, that people can change. I believe she's changed. I believe Donald Trump has changed. I'm not making any more claims than that. I'm not claiming that, you know, he's going to teach Sunday school now. I don't know. I would like to see that happen. That would be great. Or that he's, I don't know. But I think he is a different man than when he was running for president, in a good way. And I think Melania is a lady now in every sense of the word. And she does speak, what, five languages? How dare he mock her in that way? She says, you know, we know. Yeah. So that was the start of it. But then it got worse because Jimmy Kimmel then comes out with a monologue where he says things about Sean that I can't repeat. They're sexual things. And then he takes it even further and he starts to infer that Sean Hannity and President Donald Trump are having a homosexual relationship. And then he gets very graphic and physical in his descriptions. And it's very disgusting. It really is. It's just amazing. And so now here's the irony of it, though. Jimmy Kimmel is doing this, and Sean, in return, started calling him a pervert and a Harvey Weinstein Jr. for the things that he was saying. And Jimmy then tweeted back more obscenities, inferring homosexual acts between Hannity and Trump. And so but here's what happened with this. There's been now pushback on Jimmy Kimmel from gay activists, saying, how dare, you know, you think you're just feuding with Hannity. Congratulations, pal, you just alienated your LGBT viewers. Then they talk about here it is, here's another one. So it's okay for you, Jimmy Kimmel, to make homophobic slurs? What a blank, says another listener. And so another person tweets, haha, is this the part where liberals are okay with sexual orientation jokes as long as it's about conservatives? Funny stuff. Anyway, so he's getting a tremendous pushback from the gay community. But the thing that strikes me is just the vulgarity of it all. You know, Jimmy Kimmel used to be fun. He used to be funny. And so did so many of these late night comedians. They used to be funny, but there's an anger and a bitterness. They've always been dirty. I mean, not all of them, but most of them have been dirty with their jokes. But this is getting... it's just taking on a twist of darkness that seems It just has taken their humor away. This is not funny. This is just not funny. I don't know who thinks this is funny, but it isn't funny. So that's what's happening with Jimmy Kimmel and Sean Hannity, in case you had missed that story. And then speaking of comedians who are vulgar, and Bill Maher, you know, I've been on Bill's show many times. I got to know him a little bit when I was with CWA and still in D.C., working for them. Bill is actually doing something very interesting. He is defending Laura Ingraham. You may know that Laura has been targeted by advertisers because of her criticism of David Hogg, the so-called organizer of these the high school students from Florida. You know all about this. By the way, did you see the statements he made, the vulgar things that David Hogg said in an article or in an interview? I can't even repeat those. I tweeted it, but I can't say them over the air. Just what a piece of work this kid is. So maybe I'll be targeted now too. Yeah. So that's all right. Laura went after him because he was rejected by all these schools in Florida. He said that himself on his Facebook page, and she said something about it. So now he's asked for her advertisers to boycott her show on Fox and her radio show, and having great success with it, by the way. And the interesting Bill Maher's response to this, I thought, was very interesting. Let's listen.
I want to defend Laura Ingraham. I know that sounds ridiculous. But it has to do with the Parkland kids and guns and free speech. Now, I think those kids did a great thing. They put this issue in a place we've never had it before, and I wish them success. But, you know, if you're going to be out there in the arena and make yourselves the champions of this cause, people are going to have the right, I think, to argue back. Now, Laura Ingraham, and we go back to early days of Politically Incorrect. Oh, my God, there she is, right. Oh, where did the years go? Yeah. Well, and in the intervening years, I mean, she just has become a deliberately terrible person, I think. You know, just saying horrible things. But you know what? Here's what she tweeted. David Hogg rejected by four colleges, because he put that up there, because, of course, we have to share everything, to which he applied and whined about it. Okay. Maybe you shouldn't say that about a 17-year-old, but again, he is in the arena, and then he calls for a boycott of her sponsors. Now, what is... Really? Is that American? To call for...
Let me explain something.
And he complains about bullying. Bullying. I have been the victim of a boycott.
I lost a job once.
It is wrong. You shouldn't do this by team. You should do it by principle.
I agree.
But you know, it can't be the case that you are your own human shield. I understand they're in high school. So if they say something, people do have the right to answer back. My friend Killer Mike said something on NRA TV recently, and it was perfectly reasonable, and he had to apologize. And he shouldn't have apologized. All he said was, we're a gun-owning family.
So that was Bill Maher. You know, Bill is an interesting person because I think he's full of vitriol when it comes to religion. He's certainly very permissive when it comes to sexuality. I actually think that's kind of his great downfall. I think that's why he is so rabidly atheistic, because he wants to do what he wants to do. But he also has this interesting sense of honesty. Like when you talk to him, he likes it when you're straight with him and when you don't bend. If you wiggle, if you equivocate, if you try to make nice, he has no respect for you. And he knows Laura doesn't do that. I think that's one of the reasons he defended her. Plus, he just has a sense of fairness on this. So, but of course, he had to do his obligatory slam on her, too. That's Bill. That's the way it goes in this culture. This is the world in which we live. I have to take a break. And when we come back, did you hear Mark Robinson, that guy from Greensboro, make a speech in front of the city council in Greensboro last week? It's been all over the place, but I wasn't here to play it for you, so I'm going to, because it was terrific, and I want to make sure you heard it. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
And who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this.
My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Former Vanderbilt University law professor and conservative powerhouse Dr. Carol Swain has announced her run for mayor of the city of Nashville, Tennessee. Dr. Swain is seeking to fulfill the remaining term of disgraced former Nashville mayor Megan Berry, who was forced to resign from that office as a part of a plea deal in a criminal case. Dr. Swain said she is running for mayor to offer Nashvillians a true conservative alternative and to change course from the city's regressive past.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association. Come join Sandy Rios for a walk back in time when she was a young grieving mom, discovering firsthand how God's strength is made perfect in weakness.
I'll be the song for you. I'll be the symphony.
The music of Sasha's song, Sandy Rios' first album project, is a reminder of God's faithfulness.
Would God sustain us?
Produced by John Ennis of the Billy Graham Crusade with members of the Indianapolis Orchestra, this beautiful music will lift your heart.
Like peering through a window blurred with rain, emotions run together in a flood of doubt and pain.
Available on CD at afastore.net.
I would like to give a hearty thumbs up and thank Abraham Hamilton III for his spot-on show called The Hamilton Corner. It is intelligent, well-researched. It's a counterpoint to the mainstream propaganda.
And I just want to give a shout-out to Abraham Hamilton III. Brother, you are a breath of fresh air, especially during the time slot that I listen to you on my way home from work.
Hi, this is Abraham Hamilton III, and it really blows me away to hear how God is using the Hamilton Corner and all the other programs on American Family Radio. He's doing an amazing work here. That's why I'm glad to have an opportunity to ask you to partner with us financially during our three-day share-a-thon starting Tuesday, April 17th.
God bless you. Keep up the good work.
Hamilton, keep on doing what you are doing. It's much appreciated.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. With John Bolton's installation today as the president's new national security advisor, Donald Trump has taken a huge stride toward putting in place a team to help him protect our country against all enemies, foreign and domestic, arguably the most insidious of such enemies, whom he explicitly promised to defeat back on August 15, 2016, are adherents to the toxic Islamic ideology they call Sharia. Ever since, Mr. Trump has been roundly attacked for his clarity about this threat and his determination to vanquish it. Ditto, Ambassador Bolton. Now those enemies are desperate to keep another robust opponent of Sharia supremacism from joining the Trump cabinet. Ironically, by raising objections on these grounds to Secretary of State designate Mike Pompeo's confirmation, they will find the American people still want the truth about jihadism and leaders who will counter it decisively. Bring on that debate. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sometimes it seems like Frank Affney and I think alike. What do you think? I've been talking this morning a great deal about, I started the show talking about John Bolton and Mike Pompeo and all the things that he just talked to you about. So it's just interesting when I hear him do his commentary, and it's what I just said to you. It's a great affirmation, actually, because I trust Frank so much. By the way, Sandy Rios back with you. Interesting, I'm sure you just heard the spot in the spot break for Sasha's song. That was my first album. And the reason we're doing this now, we played some of the music. I used to be a singer. Some of you know that, some others of you don't. We played some of the music from Sasha's song on Good Friday, and we had anticipated making that available to you on Good Friday. But for some reason, a series of reasons, It didn't happen. And so that's why we're doing it starting today, just so that in case, through the years, I've had a lot of people ask me for that album. I think probably because it was recorded during a very difficult time in my own life when my daughter was so sick, and I had no idea how God was going to resolve that, if ever. You know, Sasha, I took care of Sasha for 20 years in our home, and she was severely disabled. It was a slog, and it was difficult, and it was hard spiritually. So out of that, that first album was dedicated to her, Sasha's song. And I think that some of the music there, because I poured my heart into it and because people who wrote that music were inspired at the time they wrote it, I had the chance to sing it. It was a combination of just the powerful move of the Holy Spirit to comfort and also to just renew faith. And so through the years, people have still been contacting me for Sasha's song, which has kind of amazed me. That was, again, my first project, but it seems to have been one that God marked with his own spirit. And so, I remember when I was in Chicago years ago, after I made that first album, was traveling and singing, and life was difficult in other ways. I remember specifically one morning waking up to the music alarm. I'd had a really bad night for various reasons, discouraged, worried, sick. And woke up to my clock alarm with me singing to myself a song that I recorded called "He is Able, He is Able, He is Able." And I started to cry, and I realized that God was speaking to me back through my own music. I didn't write the song, but I sang the song, and God was speaking right back to me. Listen, I haven't forgotten. I'm right here, and I am able. And of course, my life story is one of pretty amazing how God did restore so much of the things in my life that were so difficult. So we've repackaged Sasha's song, and because so many people, again, through the years have asked for it, we're making it available to you, my listeners. And so you can go to the AFA store and get it. And if you're going through a hard time, or if you know someone who is, I would especially recommend it. Now, it's got some weird 80s stuff in it, because it's an older album. So you can laugh at me if you want. You have my permission. But I think the ballads in there are just beautiful. And I think they will have ministry to you. So that's Sasha's song. Again, it's at the AFA store, and I hope you will enjoy it. And by the way, you American Family Radio listeners, our Share-a-thon is next week. And you just heard Abraham talk about that in the spot break. But let me just say, we love your stories, and so we would love to hear what American Family Radio has meant to you. Have you made that call yet and let people know? Well, if you haven't, write down this number. It's 877-876-8893. That's 877-876-8893. Call the number and just tell them, what American Family Radio has meant to you. Now, it's going to prompt you. It'll be like an automated system. And if you have to re-record, if you say something you didn't mean to say, you can erase it and go back. So it's not so frightening. You can do it, and I think you'll enjoy it. And, of course, we try to use, I think we probably use most every one. Can't promise that, but chances are you're going to hear yourself during Share-a-thon. So 877-876-8893 is the number to call in order to make your voice heard during Share-a-thon. Let's see. Do I have time? Yes, I do. Mark Robinson went to a city council meeting in Greensboro. I think it was just last week. And he didn't plan to go. You probably may have heard him on Fox saying that he just gotten home from work. It was like 45 minutes before the meeting was supposed to begin. He's not involved in politics. He does engage on social media. He does follow the news and what's going on. He has opinions. But he's never gotten involved in public life or running for office. He's working and he's going to school, for heaven's sake. And so he decided, I got to go. I have to go because they were talking about guns. And boy, did he go. And boy, did he speak. And he said, as I sat there and listened to them, I thought, he just said, I couldn't stand what was happening. It bothered me so much. And finally, I just felt like I had to get up and I had to say something. And this is what he said. Mark Robinson, here it is.
I didn't have time to write a fancy speech. I didn't have time to, I didn't have the resource of a English teacher to sit down and write a speech with at school today and be, bought over here or practice or anything. What I really came down here for is this. I've heard a whole lot of people in here talking tonight about this group and that group, and domestic violence and blacks. these minorities and that minority. What I want to know is, when are you all going to start standing up for the majority? And here's who the majority is. I'm the majority. I'm a law-abiding citizen who's never shot anybody, never committed a serious crime, never committed a felony. I've never done anything like that. But it seems like every time we have one of these shootings, nobody wants to blame, put the blame where it goes, which is at the shooter's feet. You want to put it at my feet. You want to turn around and restrict my right, constitutional right that's spelled out in black and white. You want to restrict my right to buy a firearm and protect myself from some of the very people you're talking about in here tonight. It's ridiculous. I don't think Rod Serling could come up with a better script. It does not make any sense. The law-abiding citizens of this community and many communities around this country, we're the first ones taxed and the last ones considered and the first ones punished when things like this happen, because our rights are the ones that are being taken away. That's the reason why I came out here today, gun show or no gun show, NRA or no NRA. I'm here to stand up for the law-abiding citizens of this community, because I'm going to tell you that what's going to happen. You can take the guns away from us all you want to. You all write a law. I follow the law. I'll bring my guns down here. I'll turn them in.
That's the first part of it, but he's not done. Let's listen. Mark Robinson in Greensboro at the city council.
But here's what's going to happen. The Crips and the Bloods on the other side of town, they're not going to turn their guns in. They're going to hold on to them. And what's going to happen when you have to send the police down there to go take them? The police can barely enforce the law as it is. It's what I see. We demonize the police, criminalize and vilify the police, and we make the criminals into victims. And we're talking about restricting guns? How are you going to do that? How are you going to do that when the police department's already hamstrung? You're not going to be able to go down here and take these guns from these criminals. So the criminals are going to hold on to their guns. They're still going to have them. They're still going to break in my house, and they're still going to shoot me with them. And guess who's going to be the one that suffers? It's going to be me. Well, I'm here to tell you tonight, it is not going to happen without a fight. And when I say fight, I don't mean shots fired. I don't mean fist thrown. I mean I'm going to come down here to this city council just like these loonies from the left do, until you listen to the majority of the people in this city. And I am the majority. The majority of the people in this city are law-abiding, and they follow the law. And they want their constitutional right to be able to bear arms. They want to be able to go to the gun show and buy a hunting rifle or a sport rifle. They're no military-grade weapons sold at the gun show. An AR-15 is not a military-grade weapon. Anybody that would go into combat with an AR-15 is a fool. It's a semi-automatic 22 rifle. You'd be killed in 15 minutes in combat with that thing. So we need to dispel all these myths, and we need to drop all this division that we got going on here. Because the bottom line is, when that Second Amendment was written, whether the framers liked it or not, they wrote it for everybody. And I am everybody. And the law-abiding citizens of this city are everybody. And we want our rights, and we want to keep our rights. And by God, we're going to keep them.
Mark Robinson, wow. That was a Greensboro City Council, and I wanted to make sure you heard it. And by the way, we'll put it on our Facebook page in case you missed it, so that you can listen to it again and share it. You know, the thing that I think about when I hear Mark speak, I think of a couple of things. I was off the air last week when it was Dr. Martin Luther King, the anniversary of his, I think it was the anniversary of his shooting. It wasn't his birthday. And so there was a lot of talk about it. But what happens in those situations, to me, is that the left takes over that. And they take over the narrative, and they completely lose what Dr. King actually said. You know, Mark Robinson is in the flesh, living example of what Dr. Martin Luther King wanted to happen, that he wanted to see on the other side, was that people were judged by their character, not the color of their skin. Mark Robinson he's at one with us. It has nothing to do with color. It has to do with character, with principles, with values. And you can see, you know, in America, anybody can become an American. I think it was Abraham Lincoln who said that. I think it was Teddy Roosevelt who repeated it. Because we are a nation of values, and of very particular views about freedom, responsible freedom. We have a constitution that we rally around, a Bill of Rights. And any person from any color or creed, not creed, but any color or race, it has nothing to do with that. And that's what, again, Martin Luther King had in mind. It wasn't that way in the 60s and the 50s and earlier than that in this country. There was terrible racism. But this country has worked really hard, really hard. People have worked really hard. You know, I have to say, again, with the people that I know, when I was growing up, I heard lots of racism. I heard it in my father's family. I've explained this before. I've heard terrible things said. I've said this before. Forgive me for repeating myself. One of my father's close members, I don't want to say too much, be too specific to disparage them, but let me just say it was a close family member, was a complete racist, and I got into a huge fight with him in front of the entire family when I was 18 years old. So I'm just saying there was a strong strain of racism in my own families, not my parents, not my father even, in spite of how he grew up. And yet still there was, you know, it was a thing that evolved, an understanding of how to negotiate the differences in race. And I have to say that I have seen that change of the people that I know. I don't hear racial jokes. I don't hear statements. I just don't know who's. So this whole notion that suddenly we are overwhelmed with a new wave of racism in my experience, it's coming from the left. It's not coming from the right. Because it comports to their benefit to accuse their opponents of racism. And it started with Barack Obama. It started with Eric Holder. They laid down the gauntlet as soon as they were elected. Eric Holder was the first one that verbalized it. I remember, again, when he took office as attorney general and he said, we have institutional racism. And that was going to be like the focus of his time as attorney general. And certainly it was. It was. He stirred up racial divide successfully in every single area, so much so that we ended up with that tragedy in that Florida school because of the, excuse me, stupid, mindless, feckless, evil, wicked policies of Eric Holder and Barack Obama that made it impossible for police departments and school systems and districts to punish minority students because it would be demonstrating racism if they did that. That's how we got that problem. That's how the tragedy in Florida took place. Whether that's been made clear or not, I don't know, but trust me, it is clear. It was the policies established by the Obama administration that were hell-bent on stopping this supposed racism. And so it became perverted and twisted. This is not what Dr. King had in mind. He never said that black young men who are criminals, who prey on their own community and kill their own people and disrespect their mothers, should be let off the hook because they're black. Dr. King would never have said that. We are punished. We should be punished equally regardless of our color, and we should be united and given opportunity equally, blindly, with blind regard to our color. Mark Robinson's speech was a breath of fresh air, and you can bet the left is trying to figure out now how in the world they can undermine and destroy him. You can take that to the bank. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.